And the Prime Minister came out wearing his pretend Winston Churchill facial expression to address the nation. Everyone knew something bad was on the way. Bad, but boring, probably. The Prime Minister announced that experts and scientists had made a shocking discovery and that nothing would ever be the same again, and that tough times lay in the future, but with enough bulldog spirit we'd get through the turmoil and we'd be stronger for it. My friends, he said, fumbling with a memo that had important plastered across it. My friends, I have some bad news. We're going to have to ban the colour yellow, he said. You see, scientists and experts, after painstaking research and alliance with a multitude of international bodies, had discovered that yellow, the colour yellow, was actually a severe health risk. Staring at the brightness of yellow induced in the individual something which became known as yellow rupture, which was a reaction to the trauma such brightness brought about in the public. They had the data, they had the research. Yellow rupture was the worst health risk the world had ever known. This, of course, seemed to be quite ridiculous to Joe Public, many of whom immediately burst out laughing and instantly started pretending to be suffering painful reactions to every yellow surface or object in their vicinity. But the laughter died out when it was announced 2 days later that sunglasses were to be made compulsory during daylight hours, under threat of a £500 fine. And that was pretty much it for weeks, into months, at least at the level of the street it was. People adjusted, and after all, sunglasses were pretty cool to wear. In the institutions of power, however, whether governmental or private NGOs, there was a frenzy of activity. There was an emergency at hand, and somebody, them, of course, needed to manage the public mood. Terms such as brainwash or propaganda were frowned upon within these institutions. Instead, they preferred to adopt euphemisms and more technical and smart-sounding language such as managing public perceptions on yellow rupture, or challenging yellow bias in a post-yellow world, or incentives and conditions of yellow rupture messaging. The crowning glory of the public relations departments was the coining of the term yellow brain. A yellow brain was a low IQ, low status person that was fashionable to hate. Yellow brains were a plague. The technocratic description was for the yellow brains as following: individuals showing irrational devotion to the pre-yellow rupture paradigm. In practice, this meant social media influencers being given the tip-off to introduce the term into public discourse, which they slavishly did, each personality passing off the term yellow brain as if it was a product of their own genius rather than a well-funded group of sociologists. And thus, suitably dehumanised by the system, the yellow brains, which is to say people who thought for themselves, could be openly persecuted and dragged out before the gallery to be made examples of. Yellow brains would wake up to see their yellow cars covered in acid, black paint splashed across their walls, or even violently attacked for wearing yellow clothes. The masses got the message. The debates broke out on mainstream media, with The Guardian readers and leftists arguing that sunglasses didn't go nearly far enough. The government was dishonest. They were hiding the true danger of yellow and thinking, as always, just about money. The government, they claimed, was responsible for thousands of yellow rupture deaths with these half-hearted measures. What's more, conspiracy theorists online were running wild spreading fake news about the safety of yellow and even proposing yellow rupture was nonsense and that the whole thing was a cynical move by the elite, though to what end was in dispute. Nevertheless, the government adopted a stance of sad reluctance as they outlawed all yellow clothing, paints, decorations, streetlights and signs. One viral video featured a BBC reporter standing by a field full of rapeseed in bloom during the summer. The video depicted the young female reporter seeming to have a seizure despite wearing the highest level of protected sunblock goggles. Amazingly, she survived the ordeal and became a yellow rupture survivor, touring the media bubble, telling her story and beseeching the public to listen to the experts. This in turn led to the great bulldozing, in which thousands upon thousands of acres of crops were levelled and turned over to protect the public. Weirdly, the hospitals began to report massive numbers of people claiming to have had negative reactions to yellow. Yellow rupture was indeed seen as a state of emergency. but the people also began to question. If sunglasses worked, then why did yellow have to be purged from everyday life? But this, and other such yellow brain nonsense, was simply an algorithm tweak away from oblivion. Likewise, on the other side of the debate, it was argued that the danger of yellow rupture was so grave that it trumped property rights, and therefore it was perfectly fine for gangs of NGO-funded thugs to smash down people's fences and trample their daffodils into mush. After all, no mercy should be shown to a yellow brain. The dichotomy emerged of one side who thought they were living inside of a nightmare, and others who claimed to be resisting stupidity, selfishness and greed. And these people, whatever the government did to keep them safe from the yellow rupture was never enough, and so a more robust resistance was needed. The resistance struggled along with only a few $1 billion of funding from giant corporations as they fearlessly bullied their fellow citizens into compliance. Amazingly, the actual government always gave in to their demands too, listening to the grassroots, they called it. The resistance was, naturally, made easier by the fact social media companies would simply ban skeptics online and police would raid their homes in the real world. Nevertheless, bit by bit, step by step, the war on yellow was going well enough. The United Nations issued guidelines on shades of yellow and cards were issued by the millions so that the public could test objects against the yellowness scheme. One of the largest obstacles that had to be overcome was the fondness for yellow in the public mind with its associations with warmth and happiness and summer. Experts decided that this came down to a language game, and so the word yellow was dropped from all media and all institutions to be replaced by the term Y1, and yellow rupture would become YR. As always, big tech was on hand to purge the entire internet of the term yellow and replace it with Y1, and each night the mainstream news reported on the cases of YR that had swamped the hospitals that day. And it worked. After a time, the public forgot how yellow made them feel, and because they never saw it in their lives anymore, it drifted away from their consciousness. It was a war like nobody had ever seen before. All-encompassing, all-consuming, all that mattered. The last bumblebee was paraded live on TV, locked in a transparent blue box, to frenzied celebrations across the land, then publicly gassed, live on air. The seashores had long been a problem. There's a lot of gold and sand, after all, but scientists solved the problem by dyeing the sea black so eventually the sand became saturated with safer, greyer colours. The greying of the beaches was one of the proudest moments of the elites. Going live on TV and across all social media sites, they boasted at length that the issue of the beaches and the seaside had been a great one. But now it was finally possible to visit the seaside again, providing you wore level 9 sunglasses at night while stayed firmly on the dyed grey sands. You could enjoy it all once again. They promised things would go back to normal. It's just that this was the new normal, safer than the last normal. Having purged the Western world of the world of yellow, or Y1, and having managed to replace the collapsed food market with synthetic protein blocks, all coloured by either grey or white, the experts and the elites finally got down to the core problem of all of this. What do we do about the sun? This, then, broke down into two camps. Neither questioned the existence of yellow rupture or its seriousness, of course. Instead, it was a debate over whether the problem of the sun should be dealt with externally, meaning block it out at high altitude via some chemical compound, or internally, which usually came down to forcing eye surgery on the masses so they couldn't see it, or the enforced wearing of neck braces so people could only look down. And it was here that the dialectic finally began to rest, to settle into a new political paradigm. The external versus internal debate, as it would become known, could never really be resolved, and a person's political identity could be tailored to which side of that debate they agreed with, at least within mainstream circles. YR deniers, yellow brains of course, being simply jailed, banned or written off as unhinged maniacs. The debate over whether to block out the sun or surgically alter the individual allowed the political and media class to celebrate their own genius. After all, times had been tough, and here they were engaging in robust political debate at the end of it all, liberalism and the marketplace of ideas had come through in the end, and what's more, almost everybody was invited to take part. And so it came to pass, when the experts banned the colour yellow.